welcome to the big show, the show where we talk about all the big stories in tech, or sometimes they're not so big, especially right now. There's not too much happening. But as always, I have a really, really cool panel with me. The one person that is missing is obviously Ewan, and there have been some questions about him, whether he's okay. Like, there were some comments. So he asked me to relay his thanks for everything, and he's doing absolutely fine. If you're in the Slack room, I mean, you've seen him every day. Like, he's okay. He's just doing dealing with some family stuff, and he's very excited to come back very soon. Potentially next week, we'll see how he feels and how things go. But he will definitely be back. Stay tuned. And as I said, I have a really good panel with me today, two very reliable people. First of all, we have Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. And it's great to get to see you twice in one day.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? And we do this every Friday, kind of.
And every Friday is awesome because of it.
It is. Friday is my favorite day, not just because it's Friday and it's beginning of the weekend, but also because we can do the Mac show and the Big Show. Super excited. Yep. In the Mac show, we talked a little bit about the crazy zoo that is Boulder. It's raccoons picking locks, and we learned since then that raccoons can actually do combination locks and stuff. So
yes, and I need to correct something I said. Because I said get combination locks like the mm-hmm. travel locks, mm-hmm. not the ones like travel locks, because those have the little keyhole on the end. So the raccoons could pick that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think someone in the chat room sent a link to an article about raccoons actually remembering combinations and stuff like that. So they're smart little buggers.
They're smart little buggers. Yep.
How's everything else other than raccoons everywhere?
Since I have air conditioning in my place, things are fine because it's currently 34°C, which is 97 Fahrenheit.
Should be something like that.
Yeah. Ish.
Mm-hmm. Close to 100 somewhere.
Yeah, actually, I have technology. Let me do a quick check.
I don't think it's as high as that, but yeah.
No, you're right. 93.2.
93, all right. Yeah, we had that here today as well. 92, 93.
I have decided that even though the United States refuses to use the correct temperature scale, that I'm going to get in the habit of using it. Mm-hmm. So the app that I keep in my menu bar, which is forecast something, it's through SetApp. Mm-hmm. I changed it to Celsius. Mm-hmm. And now anytime I want to know what that relates to in Fahrenheit, I do a quick search. So
yeah, that helps.
I am getting in the habit of using the correct temperature scale.
So what you're really saying is you're getting ready to either move to Canada or to Europe, or basically anywhere else in the world, right?
It's that, or I have to be prepared for the possibility that because our government has become so incompetent that someone's going to show up and take over. Okay. and say, this whole thing with old school measurement systems, mm-hmm. that's got to end now.
You know what the weirdest thing was that I saw in the US? There's a strip of highway in Arizona, in the Tucson area, that is fully European or kilometers and everything.
Oh, right. I remember that.
I'm like, why? I mean, yeah, it's okay. It doesn't really matter, but it's why? In the middle of nowhere.
I remember that. I used to have family that lived in Tucson. And I remember driving, and all of a sudden the sign was KPH instead of MPH.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm like, okay. I guess people are okay with that here.
Well, I mean, they're probably not reading the speed limit sign anyhow.
Oh, that's true. That's true. You know, yeah, I mean, all the exits, I mean, it doesn't matter whether it says in, like, whatever, in 3 miles or in, what is that, 4.5 kilometers, like something like that. It's like, who cares? Something like it's coming. That's basically the information you need. It's coming. The next exit is coming.
And their smartphone's going to tell them where to turn anyhow.
True. That is very true. But as I said, it was really strange when I saw that. I was like, that's different.
Yeah, and it's been like that for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hasn't really done anything. Like everything
it's
else,
the one part of the United States that actually caught on to a modern measurement system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's some kind of test. I think there were signs about it being like some sort of test thing. So I don't know. Maybe some of the listeners can like clarify.
Yeah, let us know how that test is working out.
Yeah, whether anybody even cares at this point. Anyway, enough about that. We have, of course, Mr. Alistair Dabbs with us. Very happy that you're here.
Yeah, I was just thinking, does a measurement system that was invented in the Napoleonic era count as a modern system?
Well, compared to what we are using, yes.
Oh, okay.
It's all relative.
Yeah, I'll hold up all 12 fingers and say, yeah, you're right. So while Jeff has brought you over these past few weeks mountain lions and raccoons, I have to say your story about the raccoons did remind me of that Studio Ghibli film, Pompoko. They are smart little buggers, aren't they?
These, however, don't grab their crotch and change into different forms.
It's like Michael Jackson.
Right.
Yeah. No. Well, you know, over these past few weeks, I've also tried to bring you sharks and vultures.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The lock-in. The latest craze was because they've reopened the beaches, obviously, on the Mediterranean. They have lots of police and gendarmes, and they're very strict about keeping people apart, and people are very well behaved. And then someone did a bit of a Jaws, you know, a screaming person goes, and of course everyone ran off this beach apparently, and they thought they'd seen one of those snapping turtles, you know, those kind of tortoises that have got like a really big jaw and could take a toe off.
Mm-hmm.
So of course all the gendarmes and everyone were looking everywhere for some freaky snapping turtle thing. Well, where would that come from? You know, they're not native to that part of the world. And eventually found something vaguely similar. Well, I suppose it had a shell. I think they call it, is it a crocodile or is it an alligator turtle? I don't know, but it's about 20 centimeters long. You know what I mean? It looks great in a photograph, but depending on how big the photograph is, but exactly. I don't know what they're thinking. Yeah, that was a bit of a disappointment.
If you get really close, it looks really big.
Yes, it might. It might take off an eyelash. I don't know.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
So that's dust down here. Yeah. What's happened? Oh, yes. I've had some job opportunities have opened up. I'm not allowed to talk about them, but forget everything I said in my main story last week. That'll improve my chances. Right, okay, moving on.
We can't even remember what it was, so we're
good.
There's no record of it either.
We did a show last week.
Already forgotten.
Yeah, there's no record of it at all. Like, nothing.
But you know, when you go for an interview and they trawl up your social media history, I don't want that one. Anyway,
so. I don't think we've posted that show yet, so you're lucky.
Don't get the job. Yeah, you can. I'll talk about it again. Maybe I'll use that in the interview. Mm-hmm.
You know, I hadn't thought about that, but based on my social media, I probably shouldn't be given any job ever.
No, that's not true. Yeah. You should get every job I see. Everything that's important.
Okay, everything that's important. Yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah, everything that's
important. Well, I did read a story talking about animals. They're trying to reintroduce bison to Kent in Britain.
What?
So southeast corner of England, Kent.
Reintroduce?
Yeah, that's the
funny thing. It's not a native animal.
Well, apparently it was 12,000 years ago. Okay. So the papers are saying they're going to reintroduce. Mm. Oh, them again.
Yeah. How about the woolly mammoth?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Anyway, it's nothing to do with this, so I didn't bring a link, but I did see that in the papers.
Yeah, that is really funny. So you want to get us started with the first story?
I've just pasted a link into the chat room thing. And the story, if I've pasted the correct one in, yes, I have done, it's the usual business about in the UK whether Huawei should be allowed to be one of the providers in the 5G infrastructure. And it goes on back and forth. And, you know, we know no one's lying. We know no one's stupid. But, you know, we need the kit. We wish someone else could supply it. Mm-hmm. You know, we know, despite everything that Huawei says, we all know where they are. But what I thought was funny about this story on the latest is that someone's who used to work at GCHQ, so Secret Service in Britain, the spy lot, has come up with an unofficial report, which means he no longer works at GCHQ, so it's going to be unofficial, isn't it? Saying, you know, basically, don't let them in, you know, all your secrets all vanish anyway. And you think, well, okay, well, I suppose anyone could write that if they want to. But look who it is who's written it. It's Christopher Steele again. Do you remember Christopher Steele? He was the guy that wrote that report about Donald Trump being in the pockets of Putin before his election. And the problem with this is you can write the report. You know, he should be a trusted person. But then when you say, okay, I know it's a social media thing, you know, where's the evidence? You know, he can, you know, I don't know what to say. I mean, it's Secret Service. So he turns back and goes, well, I can't show you the evidence. It's secret.
Yeah, that's usually the problem.
And you go, okay, so really I've got to take this completely on trust. And I don't know, an individual who used to work at GCHQ, is that someone who's more trustworthy or less trustworthy than someone who's still working at GCHQ?
That is a good question.
So I don't know. This just kind of reinforces what people probably already think about Huawei, which is, you know, they make pretty good kit reasonably inexpensively. And, you know, a bit like Samsung, they have a very, very fast development process. Mm-hmm. So they get stuff to market quickly. And I don't think, you know, don't think they're evil, but they're in the pockets of the government. But then everyone has to be because it's a communist country. So
yeah, exactly.
It's not like their fault.
There's no other way. Like everybody in that country is in the pocket of the government.
Well, you know,
some sort.
Choice do you have? If you're not, you live in Hong Kong and you're arrested. I mean, it's just, you're stuck, aren't you? Mm-hmm. But I just... Of the various things that are coming out about Huawei, I just like the idea that it's come from this guy. Of all the people that could have done it, it's this guy. Mm-hmm. So now everyone who supported Trump is going, no, it's rubbish. Huawei's great.
But those people are also pronouncing it Huawei.
Huawei.
Huawei. I talked about it. This much pronounces it Wahey.
I like that actually. Wahey.
Is that your wahey in your hands, or are you just pleased to see me?
I mean, the question with reports like that is always like what's behind that? Like what the person who is releasing it? What are they trying to gain from it? Like what's their
report?
Yeah, I mean, what's your motivation? Are they just doing it because they can, because they want to do some good, or have they like ulterior motive? You never know.
Well, I think it's a good question because speculating on people's motives for publishing this, because apparently it was in the Daily Mail, which I don't read.
Which nobody should read.
I used to work at, but no, I don't read. And obviously they don't question motives in quite that way. They just say, this guy's ex-GCHQ. Mm-hmm. And it's like saying ex-government. You go, okay, so what are you now? Are you in a lobby company? Mm-hmm. Are you in a think tank? You know, that there has to be some other reason, as you say.
Yeah.
Patrice, there's a reason for you publishing. You don't just do it for because you're bored of growing tomatoes. Well, you know,
it's
part of his job.
Well, you might be, and it's a valid answer, but you have to ask the question at least.
Yeah, no, it's not an old age retirement thing. It's just doesn't no longer works there. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I've got a couple of Huawei phones, and every time you get an update message, you're always going, ooh, if I say okay to this, you know, a whole Politburo or whatever, you know, in China, mm-hmm. is going to be looking at all the photographs of my cat, you know, stupid things go through your head. Mm-hmm. And I've had, you know, people who know much more about this kind of thing than me saying, oh, what a load of old nonsense, just control, you know, what it is they're supplying and you'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And other people saying, no, even a single piece of copper cable in the system means that the Chinese government can plant bombs in our ears.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, the funny thing is both the GCHQ and also the NSA and the CIA have proven that it is possible to use equipment like that to spy on people. So it's not impossible, and it's not impossible that someone might do it. It's just a matter of like how big is the risk really. Like, and can you do something against it? Can all of those people get together and just check everything and make sure there is nothing in there?
Yeah, but also, if they're not going to use Huawei, who are they going to use?
Yeah, that's the other. I mean, we, to be honest,
I don't mind being spied on by the Koreans. They're fine. We like, you know, don't mind the Koreans spying on us. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, we could simply say, well, I mean, until there is 5G equipment from another vendor, we're not going to do it. That is an option. Simply saying, well, we don't trust Huawei, we don't do it right now.
I mean, it should all be homegrown.
That's an option.
Yeah. I mean, that would probably mean another year or two of 4G, which is, or of LTE, which is, I think, fine. I mean, fine from a consumer perspective. I'm pretty sure that all the carriers and the phone companies and whatever, they need the next big thing. They need something to sell new phones and new contracts with. So for sure, they want it yesterday.
Yeah, to me, that's the big compelling reason for 5G happening mm-hmm. sooner as opposed to later. It's not consumer need.
No.
It's the companies that are selling us devices needing to come up with interesting ways to compel us to buy new phones.
Yeah, absolutely. So sad, but
no, I was here in France. We're in the middle. We're just coming out the end of local council elections, and I was just trying to find it. There was one of the mayors who got elected. I'm trying to find his quote because it's been a very successful countrywide, you know, elections for local council. But it's been very successful for the Green Party in France. And one of the prominent winners, one of the Green mayors. There we go. The mayor of Grenoble for everyone else. Grenoble. He's quoted as saying, generally speaking, 5G is for watching porn in HD, even while you're stuck in a lift. There you go, that's a direct quote.
Oh, well, now there's another compelling reason for us to have 5G sooner.
Well, you'd think the Chinese could have homegrown porn. I don't know why they have to watch ours.
Because for them, that would be exotic.
It's probably the same reason.
Yes. Yes, we were inscrutable.
Yeah. I mean... I honestly don't know where I stand on this. Like, I can understand the concerns totally, but I also understand the, like, sometimes you have to, yeah, you have to weigh the, like, the pros and the cons of a technology and then decide whether you're going to accept the risk.
Well, also, you know, you wonder how long it's going to take, because at the end of this particular story, for the link that I gave in the Register, it kind of goes, right, when Britain makes its final decision. And I was thinking, I thought we'd made the decision. In fact, yeah, we made the decision about five times. One exactly. was, we'll not have Huawei. Another one was, we might have Huawei. And then Boris Johnson goes, nothing wrong with Huawei. Then Boris Johnson goes, no, we're not having Huawei. And it's just going on indefinitely. And I just thought it'd be funny if they finally give it the go-ahead and say, yeah, Huawei can be involved in 5G. And then all those Hong Kong citizens we receive will then tear down all the masts.
Yeah. You know, if there's a serious problem with data being stolen through Huawei equipment, there are people that are monitoring data throughput. So they would be able to see that there's additional data that's being pushed through these systems. It's the same sort of thing like people that are paranoid about their smart home assistant, mm-hmm. their Echo or their HomePod or whatever, listening to everything they say. If they were actually listening to everything we said and sending that off to another company, that would be very, very obvious, because all these security professionals that are watching all the data going through networks would be able to say, yes, these devices are sending off all this extra data. So there is a check system in place, because there are people that will be watching for the extra information mm-hmm. passing through. And so we would know if this is a problem.
Yeah. I mean, is it all that different than Facebook and Google basically siphoning off all the data? I don't know.
No, it's just a different name.
Yeah, true.
Well, and different people, that was the other thing, was, you know, I get the impression, I mean, it's not specific to GCHQ, it's the same in the States and anywhere, but mm-hmm. they're saying, how dare the Chinese government spy on British citizens? That's what we're doing. You know?
Exactly.
When we spy on them and misuse the data and lock people up, it's okay. Mm-hmm. But if someone else does it, we're not having it done by people who eat more noodles than us. You know, what's it all about?
If we spy on the entire world, it's totally fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jeff, do you have...
Anyway, stories ended. I did have some other stories, but they were really boring.
Well, we're going to come back to that. We have more time for more stories. So, but first I wanted to ask Jeff whether he has one for us.
Here we go. As long as we are starting off with security and privacy, I'll just keep that ball rolling. So Signal, the chat and messaging app that has become well known for providing really good privacy and security, is losing, at least from some people's perspective, some of the key features that make it such a private and secure mm-hmm. messaging platform. And this has been building up for a little while now. And for people that need some background, Signal is adding in the ability to be able to communicate with people based on names as opposed to phone numbers. And so part of the system that enables that means they will now upload and have a copy of your contacts. And so they started off back in spring by requesting Signal users to set up a PIN number for their mm-hmm. account, so that their contacts would then be uploaded and then be secured. And they have now switched that to a requirement. So you launch Signal now and you have to set up your PIN, and then your contact list gets uploaded to their servers. And a lot of people are looking at this as for them at least, the death of Signal, because now there's information about them and the people they're contacting that's being stored on a server that's no longer in their control. So there you go. That's kind of where we are with that one right now. And I have used Signal some, but not very much, because there are very few people that I chat with that are Signal users. And my guess is those people will probably stop using Signal, which means I will stop using Signal. I also have a problem with allowing any service to hold a copy of my contact list.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've used Signal as well. I have the same issue. Like, it's, I think it might be you and maybe one other person that's on Signal. So, yeah.
I think it's, I have like two, maybe three people that use Signal, and it's only occasionally. So when I get a message through Signal, it actually catches me off guard.
Mm. Which is sad, because it is like, I really like the service. I like the idea that like I can send someone a message that nobody else can read, and I'm sure nobody else can read. Because especially since we just talked about like people, like systems spy, or like government spying on people and all of that. I mean, yeah, I think privacy is a like really right, and that's. That's why I like TikTok. That's why I like Signal. I was just looking at my story, so that's why I'm like.
That was very funny. I think prior to this, the only information that Signal would have on a specific phone number would be when the user signed up for an account and the last time they had communication passed through the service. And I think that was it. And now there will definitely be more information. And I can see where for some people having a list of contacts that's potentially out of their control is a major security concern.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just think about like journalists, especially like I'm thinking about Greenwald and like the crap, now I'm blanking on the name of the guy who's in Russia.
Snowden.
Why did I blank on that name? Yeah, the whole like the group surrounding Snowden, and like, I mean, as far as we know, they use Signal at least to some extent.
Well, Snowden, he was very openly endorsing Signal.
That was a while back, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, it was.
My assumption is...
I've never used it. How much does it cost?
You can use Signal for free.
Well, why would they want to do it? What does Signal get out of it then?
This makes them more competitive with other services like WhatsApp. Because once they have this data that they're storing, your Signal account becomes portable. So you get a different phone, you can move over to the other phone and not lose your conversations, not lose your contact list that you have within Signal. Otherwise, you switch phones and you're starting from scratch with Signal.
Well, your backup, to a degree. I mean, that's what your backups are usually for.
Right. Yes, I agree completely.
Yeah.
But, you know, isn't that the main feature of the program? Is once it's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
it kind of is. To me, that's the killer feature in Signal.
Mm-hmm.
It does seem funny they're not really explained what it is they're up to. You know, there's some plan, and everyone's having to guess what that plan is. Because one of my other stories was going to be about there was a bit of a fuss over LibreOffice when they changed something on the splash screen saying this is your personal edition, and everyone kind of went, what, there's a personal edition and a enterprise edition, is there? And of course, oops, we didn't mean to let on too quickly, and everyone's trying to second guess what this company's planning to do, and you're all thinking the worst, and you could be right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is Signal up to? What are they going to do? It's not just about, oh, it's for your convenience, and then make it compulsory.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think they, like, did they give any reasoning, Jeff, or is that, like, did they just do it?
It's the reasoning was that it makes your Signal account portable.
Mm. Yeah, so it's going to go commercial full proper.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, speaking of apps and security and all of that, I already alluded to it. My story is about TikTok, because Amazon banned all employees from using TikTok on their phones. So if you have a Amazon account or Amazon email on your phone, whether it's personal or business, I don't know how that works on Amazon site, but I think it doesn't matter, then they have to delete the app by today. Reason for that is obviously that TikTok has been widely talked about because it's a Chinese company, and same thing that like happens to Huawei is also happening to TikTok, that people are saying, well, I mean, we don't know what they're doing with the data and what stuff they're siphoning off. We just talked on the Mac show about TikTok actually reading your clipboard the entire time. So yeah, I mean, TikTok is saying, there was a statement from TikTok here, that they're fully committed to respecting the privacy of our users. But yeah, what that means, I mean, that is a question.
Yeah, well, respecting the privacy of your users and ensuring the privacy of your users don't have to be the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's true. Yeah, so this, as far as I know, this is one of the first bigger companies who's doing this, who's like officially banning TikTok. But
and that's because they're worried about data leakage or something, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, because they think that the Chinese government is trying to basically like have access to every phone on the planet through TikTok, because everybody's using it.
Now, nearly everybody. Mm-hmm. Now, sure. I saw the headlines for this, and I haven't read any of the articles yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, is there any talk about this is a requirement for company-owned phones, or if you're an employee, even on your personal phone, you cannot have TikTok?
So the wording in the email that Amazon sent out was that you're not permitted to use it on any mobile device that has access to Amazon email. So if you have access to Amazon email on your personal phone, I would guess you're not allowed to use it.
That would, right. Okay.
Okay. Well, that's fair enough. I remember companies back in the 10 years or more ago would ban Facebook. Yeah, it wasn't a security thing. It was just the people spending too much time on Facebook.
Yeah, we have a ban on our company forums on WhatsApp, which is funny because I know some general managers and like upper management who are using WhatsApp to communicate with like their staff and whatever. So, but it is officially banned on company phones because of privacy concerns, because we deal with health data. And there's a risk that someone might accidentally send like something that they shouldn't send over WhatsApp, and then Facebook has it.
I can see where that would be a concern.
Yeah, I mean, the chance for that is hopefully very, very low. Because you shouldn't send any that data over any channel. Like, it doesn't matter whether it's WhatsApp or not. But I mean, yeah, you know, people like sometimes. I mean, I've gotten like social security numbers and addresses from like students, just in an email.
Oh.
I'm like okay.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
bless their hearts.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you know,
got that problem. It's very easy just to add someone into the group, isn't it? Without anyone else quite knowing.
Well,
maybe
yeah,
that's part of it.
Yeah, probably. Well said. And it's very easy to use. I mean, that's a good thing, but it's also very easy to just, like, as I said, share medical information. And I mean, that could just be, I don't know, Alistair just went to the doctor. That is already privileged information.
Yeah.
Yep. I use WhatsApp as well. I have friends that all have their platform of choice, which means I have all the platforms.
Yeah, same.
and I just realized, based on Alistair saying it's so easy to add someone to a group, I have no group chats in WhatsApp. They're all individual.
Oh, you're lucky. I have a couple.
I'm going to do my best to keep it that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got a couple, unfortunately. Yeah. Okay, Alistair, you got another story, right?
I'll skip over the LibreOffice one because I've already done it. there's another one on the register I did see. I don't know if this is of any interest. Let me just pop that in. That's also in there. I'll just put the URL in the chat room, which is, it's all about the final switch off of analog radio in Britain and the final move to digital audio broadcasting, or digital audio brand DAB. And, I thought it all gone.
Yeah.
I thought there was no, I thought
yeah,
other
the
than,
big news for me is that,
you know, other than CB people in Lawrence, I didn't think anyone was using it anymore, but apparently it continues and will continue even longer, and it will just go on. And honestly, I know FM and AM can be a pain in the ass if you're, you know, in a dip, in a valley, not near one of the transmitters, or when it rains, you know what I mean? It really is difficult. On the other hand, you know, if it works, it does work extremely well.
And it's extremely simple.
And very, very low power compared with DAB digital radios. I mean, if ever you've got a DAB digital radio running on batteries, you'll know how much power it takes up. Keep replacing the buggers every 2 seconds. Whereas, you know, you got a transistor radio, good old-fashioned one for AM, FM, and you put batteries in and you have to remember the Christmas after next to buy more batteries.
Yeah. That's true. The likelihood the batteries will start leaking before they before they finally run out is
pretty high.
Is pretty high.
Also, at the end of the story, they did a typical thing they do on the register when the journalist says what he really thinks and then just crosses it out. So you get the crossed out bit and basically accusing Ofcom of going through this whole business just so they can resell those freed up chunk of the spectrum for much, much more money than they were probably sold off for at the beginning of the last century.
Yeah, that's probably part of the reason. I mean, I'm surprised that the UK still has analog radio. I think most of Europe, I think, switched that off. I mean, even Germany, and Germany is usually behind on anything. And even they, I think, a year or two ago, switched that off.
What I also liked about the old system, same with UHF, was if the signal was strong enough, and also the old analog satellite signals, if it was strong enough and you're in the right place, you can pick up stuff from anywhere. You know, there's no way I can pick up radio stations from Vladivostok or DAB. I can't, I have to go onto an internet radio.
Exactly. That's what you do these days.
Yeah. So, but I was reminded when I was a student, there was a guy I knew who was studying electrical engineering. He went on to become resident DJ at, I think it was Planet Hollywood, something like that. No, it wasn't. It was Virgin Records in Hollywood. That was it. And he's kind of helped set up a pirate radio station for the university, and he changed the antenna because they had problems transmitting the signal to people beyond the room. You know, it's really weak. And when they finally got it working, they tested it, they actually got these engineering tutor to test it out. They said, well, mm-hmm. I'm really sorry about this, but it's too strong. It's going beyond, far beyond where you want it to go. Mm-hmm. Basically, we're in this little room with a little box, a little antenna. And we're saying, what? Do you mean, you know, nearby villagers can get the signal as well by mistake? He says, no, villagers in Berlin can get it now. You know, and it was just lovely to be able to kind of be sitting in a little room and this explosion onto other people's bandwidths.
Yeah.
Like good old pirate radio should do in the middle of the night. You're trying to listen to the news and then some skanky ska reggae starts up from nowhere.
Yeah, I remember like during my school days, like somewhere late, I want to say mid to late 2000s, we like in Germany, we were doing, like there was a local like kind of radio station, like a student radio that usually like, I think all they did was like once a year, like an internet broadcast of some sort. But for 2 or 3 weeks, we got a like a analog antenna and like all the equipment from like one of the radio stations. They basically installed it. Like the process to get all of that and get it installed and get permits for it and all of that took like months, but we got it for 3 weeks. And that was actually pretty fun, like to really, I mean, we did internet streaming and like real like radio broadcast at the same time, but it was actually fun to do that. So, I mean, I can say I have been on the radio, on the actual real old school radio.
That's very cool. So I just did a little bit of research because I was curious how long the United States has been digital radio.
Mm-hmm.
We're still analog. I mean, and there's digital simulcast.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And transitioning to just digital is at least 10 years off.
Hmm. I mean, at some point you have to think about like, how much, like, how does it really matter still? Like, I mean, I know like people of a certain age are listening still to the radio, and I know like even like teenagers sometimes do it, but I think most people have switched like to full-on internet. Like, I mean, they're using music streaming services or they're using like online radio stations or anything like that. So like, do we even need to switch at this point? Like, if it's 10 years out, like, is it even relevant at that point?
What I really liked about the old stuff, especially the really crappy stuff, the AM stuff, the long wave and medium wave, mm-hmm. was how unclear it was. I saw a program on telly when someone was saying, you know, the golden age of international football was when TV sets were still black and white, and there'd be, you know, Manchester United, we'd be playing somewhere in north of France, and the TV, you know, the live TV reception of this football match would be like, you know, impossible to make anything out because it's, you know, at least 200 miles away, you know. And it was the same with radio, is the joy of listening to these stations and, you know, constantly talking like this. It was just so romantic. And the same when what Jeff's just saying, as soon as I see the letters FM or I hear someone refer to FM, I start singing the song, was it Steely Dan, in my head. It's just, there's a whole romance about, yes, FM, it's no static at all, you know. And the Godley and Cream had a song about, what was it, not Radio Luxembourg, was it Radio Luxembourg 208? Oh, can't remember, but it was just that, the idea of you listen to a piece of music and it would waft in and out, go away into static, and then come back again. And you think, wow, you know, maybe they're on the ship. This is Radio Caroline, and there's a storm. And now it's just everyone sitting in their little kind of YouTube studios, and it's all a bit, I don't know, lacks that kind of romance, I suppose. There's no mystery.
And some days there will be people that say the same thing about YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's just these people on a flat screen. Their life-size holograms aren't in the living room with you.
Yeah, oh, that's true. Or there's no holodeck.
Yeah, or hanging out with you on the holodeck.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. What's the and point?
And a
video like...
that went on for more than 30 seconds. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing their Fortnite wiggle on TikTok.
over their Huawei phone.
Sure. Jeff, do you have a second story by any chance?
Of course I do. And let me grab
I've got a third one, by the way, but yeah, go.
Okay.
And, well, and if we'll necessary, I have a third one today as well.
Yeah. We'll see.
I'm going to find a fourth.
I think we're good on time, so we'll...
Okay.
But we can do at least two.
Yeah, so here's my second story. And this starts with the background of people are freaking out because of the rumors that Apple's not going to include chargers in the new iPhones this fall. And Samsung is planning on not including chargers with some of their phones next year. And so that's the story I'm bringing now. So the idea is that Samsung feels that if they take chargers out of the boxes, it cuts down on costs, cuts down on waste.
Yeah.
And so this idea that we're going to start buying phones without chargers, I think is something that's coming a lot sooner than many people expect.
Mm-hmm.
And this isn't something that's just going to be a passing thing. And to go along with that, people that are thinking this is a new idea, not so much. 2013, I think it was 02, did a test program where they were selling smartphones without chargers. And the program, the way it worked out was 70% of the people buying phones just straight up didn't care that there was no charger included. And O2's plan was by 2015, they would not sell a single phone with a charger in the box. And I don't know why that never actually happened, because here we are in 2020, and every smartphone that I've looked at on the O2 site says it has a charger in the box. Yeah. But I do find it interesting that their product comparisons include an entry for whether or not there's a charger in the box.
Yeah, I would guess that the manufacturers just didn't want to do it. Like they didn't want to change like their packaging and everything and have like a version with charger, a version without charger, something like that.
I'm surprised they haven't done it before. I mean, the only reason you had a charger with a phone every time was every time I bought a new Nokia, the charger would be completely different with a completely different plug that would be incompatible with everything before it. So you had to have a charger. As soon as people start standardizing on various versions of, mini USB or whatever, I think at that point they could have, years ago, they said, right, do something. I mean, they could do it now. They could say, look, nothing's included. If you really want a charger, here's a token inside the box. Take it to a shop, give them, £2 and they'll give you a charger. So it becomes a pain in the ass to get the charger. It's not just free. You don't just pick it up because you can.
Yeah.
I think earphones are the same. I mean, honestly, I've got a box. I must have about 37 pairs of really shitty earphones, earbuds, which is funny because I've not had 37 phones, but I don't know where they've all come from. But they come with other bits of kit.
Yeah.
You know, when you kind of tidy up and you think, oh, I've got all these boxes, I'll just empty them. And there's another bloody set of earbuds at the bottom. What was it for? You know.
I'll send my family over. They seem to go through those, so...
Well, I'm not surprised that they're so crap that they don't work.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. No, I agree. I mean, that was like in the beginning, like when smartphones that were charged with USB were new, nobody had them. So it made sense to include a charger in the beginning because nobody had them. There weren't too many options probably. So it kind of made sense. But yeah, you're right. Like
Apple. This is with Apple, because Apple do something funny with their phones. If you're actually using a wired charging method, that they want you to, for fast charging, they want you to pair the phone with a particular cable or something weird. I'm sure I read about that somewhere.
You have to authorize.
Well, there's the thing where you can disable access to cables if your phone has been inactive for an hour or more. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah, that's an authorization part.
There's this funny thing if you want a fast charge on a certain Apple devices on USB-C that you'd have to kind of use a, you know, your favorite cable. You can't just buy a USB-C cable.
Oh, there's a difference between USB-C cables where some support fast charging and some don't. Mm.
No, but even if it says it does, I mean, I've got obviously the Apple ones, and also I've got Huawei ones. The Apple ones work with everything, but the Huawei ones won't work with Apple.
Hmm. Oh, interesting.
That's interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like it's prevented from working.
It's probably the security chip that Apple puts in the cables.
Yeah, don't want that damn electricity from China getting into this equipment.
Exactly. Yeah, no, but it totally makes sense.
Ask China. I mean,
I remember a time when Apple talked about, and I don't want to talk too much about Apple, but it's probably true for other companies. They talked about making the packaging smaller for their devices, because that was costing, there was a cost not just for the company and like shipping, but also for the environment. In like, I mean, obviously, if you need more planes to or more ships to get the devices from A to B, then like there is more carbon that's produced and all of that. For sure, the company also pays more for it because they usually pay for like weight and cargo space and all of that. And I'm pretty sure that's true for, I mean, no, I'm 100% certain that is true for every company. So making the like removing something that nobody needs, like both the headphones and the charger, or making it optional, like if someone wants it, they can just like throw it in the box after the fact. Or like when they deliver the order to you, they're like just there are three boxes instead of one. It totally makes sense because you can make the like you're saving waste, or you're saving like you don't have to produce all those chargers that nobody ever uses, and then they go back to e-waste basically. And you like don't need the space for it, so you can make the packaging smaller, so you can pack more phones or more devices into like a smaller amount of planes and whatever. So I think overall it's a win-win for everyone. I mean, for sure the company will save some money.
Yeah, we can save the world one cable tie at a time.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, and it's not actually just the charger itself. I mean, then there's wrapping for the charger, like the plastic wrap around the charger, or even the paper. Like all of that has to be produced and has to be recycled, hopefully, at the end. Mm-hmm. So as I said, for something that is not essential and that you could order extra if you really needed one, like if you said, I have no charger for this, it is nowadays with online orders anyway, super easy to just say, like pop up an option and say, hey, this doesn't come with a charger. Do you have one, or do you want to buy one for whatever, $5? Or 10, well, or whatever.
Let me come into it from a different angle. When you're buying an iPhone from Apple, here we go. Now I've got a sentence that'll work. When you're buying an iPhone from Apple on their website, you choose the things you want. You know, this is the carrier I want. This is the color I want. Mm-hmm. This is the capacity I want. And then there are add-ons that are just right there, and it shows you how much more your phone will cost. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm going to add in AirPods or AirPods Pro, mm-hmm. whatever. There can just be another checkbox that says add in a charger. And and I'm sure for cell service providers that are selling, say, Samsung phones, they can have a pop-up that comes up and says, this is how much a charger will cost if you want one, or when you're adding it, just have a checkbox right there. Mm-hmm. Add in a charger for $5 or whatever.
Or like whatever the T-Mobile.
Oh, that's a good idea. Do you remember the early flat screen iMacs? They would always come with a TV remote control.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that?
Yes, I do.
And it used to drive me, but I ended up with three of them, and I never, ever, ever watched TV on a Mac.
I remember that.
Yeah, and it was such a waste.
And I mean, like the carriers or the stores, like if you have a physical store where there is no online order process, I mean, if you buy your phone at Best Buy or whatever, they have chargers there, right there. Like they don't have to do anything. And I'm pretty sure the same is true nowadays for like all the like whatever T-Mobile or O2 or I think 3 in the UK or whatever, like all the physical stores. Like if people want to go there and buy one, they usually have accessories these days and they usually have chargers. Yeah. So it is absolutely not a problem that like someone goes to a store, has never had a phone before or whatever. Those people still exist. Yes, they had a flip phone before. Now they want a smartphone. They just go in and the like sales clerk says, tells them, well, there's no charge in here, but we have a selection. Just pick one.
Yeah. In the United States, any of the cell service provider stores that you go in, you can walk in and have never owned a phone in your entire life and get a phone, get a charger, get a case,
headphones,
and walk.
Everything
you need, headphones, and just walk out the door.
Yeah. Well, that's what they're for. No, I mean, you know, and absolutely no stupid earbuds. Honestly, I've had better quality things come out of a cracker at Christmas.
Absolutely. So it makes sense, and I really hope, I mean, I've seen those stories where, like, the rumor was about Apple, and then Samsung apparently does it too, and there were those stories saying, well, they're copying Apple, blah, blah. I don't care. I don't give a crap. Like, I think this is a good idea. Everybody should do it. Yeah. Everybody should do it. It doesn't matter who did it first. It doesn't matter. Like, as you said, O2 did it in 2013. So that one is long gone. Just do it.
Yeah. Initially, I was resistant to the idea of no charger in the box. But I blame Amazon for that because they were selling Kindles without chargers. And it wasn't clear to people that they weren't getting a charger. And so it became a bad customer experience. Mm-hmm. And so that set up my reaction to hearing that Apple was considering not including chargers. Mm. And then I decided to do some research and see what else I could find about this, which is how I came across the test that O2 did in 2013. Mm. And as I was doing more research, I started to realize, why am I even concerned about this at all? Because I haven't used the Apple charger that came in my box for at least 3 iPhones, probably more. I'm sure it's more. It's just that I can definitively say I know for at least 3 iPhones, I haven't used an Apple charger. But I'm sure it's more than that. I have a bag of Apple chargers in the closet.
Yeah, I have a box over there that has currently, I think, 6 or 7 chargers, like a couple from the US, couple from Europe. Like I've actually moved some of them around. Like I moved them to, I don't know why, they were just in a box somewhere. I moved them to the US and back. So
you have some very well-traveled chargers.
Oh, I do, and I've never even once used them. They're still the plastic wrapping around them. So I don't know why I kept them.
You remember...
Well, the moment you throw them away, you'll need it.
Well, I have so many other chargers, so...
Yeah. But do you remember when Apple had the problem with iPhone chargers that were... overheating or shorting out in some way. And so then they started making them with that little green neon dot on them for a while. So you could tell the difference between the bad ones and the good ones. I have at least one of the green dot chargers in that bag, probably
me
more.
Too.
and those are old.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. My last story is... it's about a search engine. Since we talked about search engines and that, I think last time, there's a new startup that is testing a subscription model for search engines. The company is called Neeva. It's run or formed by someone who used to work for Google in a like management capacity. I think he was in charge of the advertising side of Google. So not a small business, like a 90, it says here, $95 billion worth, that part of the company, who, like, he left after the whole, like, child, I think, like, the whole advertisement issue on YouTube with, like, ads that were not appropriate for children, that were shown to children and all of that. So he left because he saw, and I'm quoting him, an ad-supported model had limitations. It's just like the understatement of the year. So anyway, like they're creating a new, like a new company, have a new company, and they're trying to create a new search engine that you can charge for, or that they can charge for, and does not collect and sell user data at all. And I was kind of thinking, what are you thinking about that? Would you pay for a search engine if it was good and it didn't collect your data?
I want to say yes, but at the same time, if I really had the option, I don't know, but I would like to say yes. There are caveats that go along with this. I need to have something that provides me search results that are at least as good as what Google does.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, Google is the king,
unfortunately,
in the search market. So I need to be able to have searches that are going to return results that are as good and as relevant as what Google does. And I'm not sure if you can do that without collecting a lot of data about people. And then the other part of this is, what do website designers need to do to make sure that their content is being searched and cataloged as well as Google?
Mm-hmm.
So if people have to do a lot of additional work to make sure that their content shows up in Neva, unless there's a lot of users, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've seen social networks that sprung up that tried to do a paid model that didn't work because people didn't want to pay for that. And I think, I mean, could this work? Yes, it could.
Sure, it could.
It could, but I don't think it's going to be a mass market thing. I think it's always going to be a niche thing. But I mean, I would be happy with that. Like, if there was a good alternative, even if I had to pay for it, to Google, I would be rather happy with that. And I think, like I said, a small minority of people probably would. The question is that big enough?
Yeah, that's the question. Will there be a big enough user base?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, is it big enough?
Unless it's a corporate thing. I have to say I use DuckDuckGo.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I don't want people gathering the data and selling it on.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no problems with seeing adverts. Mm. I mean, none at all. I like adverts. They make me laugh. They can be fun. And, you know, during this whole pandemic lockdown, now that all the big advertisers have run off squealing because they're all afraid, all the small advertisers are now booking space. And I've seen some really appropriate ads for stuff I'm interested in, you know, books. You know, someone wouldn't be able to afford to put an ad for a book on a web page, but now they do. And you go, oh, that's good. And I've been buying books and little gadgets and little things I never would have touched before. Advertising's great.
Yeah.
You know, and events and things. So I'm not bothered about advertising. It's just what happens afterwards.
Yeah.
The feeling that I'm being sold behind my back.
Yeah, and it depends also on the advertising. Like, I mean, there's advertising like intended to basically track you and like collect as much data about you, really. And there's the advertising that you mentioned, like where it's about selling you a product that is relevant for you, which is totally fine.
So if they're not gathering your data, they don't have any data to lose or give away or get hacked.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which should be the default. Yeah, we'll have to see. I mean, there are some things in this article also about, they have a kind of like a bill of, I don't want to call it bill of rights. It's a digital bill of rights. And they have a privacy policy, and there seems to be some contradictory stuff in there. I'm guessing that they still have to work on that if they really want to follow their lofty dreams.
Mm-hmm.
It looked like someone took like a standard privacy policy and just like release that, which didn't work.
Well, that's a start.
Yeah, yeah. All right. This, speaking of advertisements, since we just talked about it, this podcast and all the other podcasts on the network are supported by TSO Host. It's one of those companies that we just talked about. Really awesome company. Really relevant for a lot of people. They really support us here at VTN. They offer domain names. They offer really good web hosting packages. They have pre-built packages for WordPress and some other content management systems. If you need something like that, and then they have servers. We have two of their servers, and I've had them for. I should really look up for how long. But it should be close to 3 years or maybe even longer than that. And we've had almost zero issues. We've had zero issues. Like, all the issues that we've had were created by either me or someone else in the backroom team because we did something wrong. So it's all our fault. It's not like TSO hosted nothing to deserve that. Like, we messed up. So yeah, all they want for the support of BTN is that we give them some brand recognition. So if you're like, if you got time, if you got like a minute or two, head over to your favorite social media. It's probably going to be Twitter or Facebook, since I don't think anybody would go anywhere else these days. Maybe TSO Host is on TikTok as well, and you're there. Well, okay. But yeah, head over there and just mention TSO Host at TSO Host on Twitter and let them know that you really appreciate that they support British Tech Network. And that's all they want. If you're by any chance in the market for anything like domain names, web hosting, web servers, then there's an offer code BTN20 that gives you 20% off everything. So also really, really cool thing. And thank you, TSO Host, for supporting the British Tech Network. And the other really awesome sponsor, and unfortunately Callum is not here today, usually we would talk to him directly, is iMendMax. It is a really good, really, really good Apple repair company based in Birmingham. They repair actually more than just Apples, like we've talked about that in the past. They'll do data recovery for anything that has a hard drive of some sort, like whether it's an old school like rotating disk thing or it's an SSD. Doesn't matter whether it's Mac or not, they will do that. And they will try to fix anything electronic they can. At least you can ask. They will tell you if they simply cannot do that for some reason. But they've done some really crazy, crazy stuff and some crazy miracles with like completely smashed and bent and whatever iPhones were, like everybody was saying, well, that thing is just gone. Like, there's nothing to do there. They restored it to basically mint condition. So that is how awesome they are. They also offer like refurbished, if you're in the market for an Apple device, they offer refurbished devices as well. So head over to imendmax.com. And yeah, if you mention BTN, you will also get 5% off. So on top of all of that awesomeness, you get 5% off. Thank you so much to imendmax for supporting BTN. Time for the cool thing. Jeff, start us off.
My cool thing is an iPhone app. It's in beta right now. And I got my invitation to be in the beta program. And I'm loving it so far. So it's an app called Soosee, S-O-O-S-E-E. And what it does is it scans the ingredients list from food packaging. And so if you're like me and you have specific dietary restrictions because of allergies, you can take all the stuff that's a problem for you, or if there's just things you don't like to eat, you can include those in your alert list as well. And whenever you hold your phone up and get the ingredients list in front of the camera, then it will like pretty much instantly tell you which things that you don't want to have are in whatever the product is. And it's also going to be available for Android. So it doesn't matter if you're an Apple fan or an Android fan, you'll be able to use this. And the list of words that they have already included for alerts, so that you can just go in and check, here's the stuff that I want to know about. It's surprisingly extensive. And I can't have aspartame. I have an aspartame allergy. Mm-hmm. So found that on the list. It was the European spelling, but that's mm-hmm. okay, because it catches the American spelling when you're scanning products.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got it set up so far to alert me to dairy, and broccoli is one of those foods that I just can't eat. It just tastes so bad to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I added broccoli to the list. It was one of the things that was there. And it's been a great little app so far. So I'm looking forward to when this comes out of beta and is officially available to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's pretty cool. All the links, if you want to find them, you can head over to britishtechnetwork.com/chat and then navigate to the 10th of July 2020. Around, when did we start? 8 p.m. UK time, whatever that is in your time zone, you will have to figure out, and you will find all the links that we mentioned and all the chats and everything. Alistair, what's your cool thing?
I've got four. I'll rattle through them really quickly. I posted the link earlier on. I've just posted a link again. I just saw this thing on The Guardian. You know the way noise-cancelling headphones work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, someone reckons they've come up with a way of making that work using speakers. So someone who lives over or next to a noisy street should be able to open their windows, switch this on, and it compensates in the same way. It noise cancels while you have an open window.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was clever. I don't know if it's real. if you could get that sounds like a cool thing that could do, no, being serious, it could do a world of wonders for mental health of people mm-hmm. living in noisy cities.
Yeah, definitely.
But I just did grab that. Right, games. There was this I just saw. I'm not a big games person, but I did like my old platformers, and I've just put in a link. They're bringing Crash Bandicoot back onto the small screen, and you can pre-register and then it will be free.
Nice.
So they're bringing it to Android first. And then maybe iOS later on. Enjoy that.
The bringing it to Android first, well, I appreciate that the potential market is much higher. Every product that I've seen come out Android first has ultimately failed. If they don't start iPhone first, where they can actually generate a lot more money,
mm-hmm.
it seems that they've never been able to be successful. Nonetheless, I hope this is successful.
Yeah, I mean,
Activision's done for.
Yeah, I mean, there is a pretty big like fan base probably for that game, so I would guess that it would be successful no matter what.
I used to love it on the PlayStation.
That would be great.
Right, another one, games. I did something about some, you know, miniature consoles. I think it was last week. Well, I think I've found a new one. I've just put in another link. It's at Ars Technica. I saw this. Sega's bringing out a sixth scale multi-game arcade cabinet. I don't know if you can follow that link.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So it's like a mini, just sits, it's really, really small. It just sits on your desk or your knee or something. And they give them the list of games. I'll read that. Alien Storm, Alien Syndrome, Altered Beast, Columns 2, Rockin', Dark Edge, Fantasy Zone, here we go, Golden Axe, and Golden Axe, Revenge of the Death Adder. Tant R, which I've no idea what that is, and Virtua Fighter. Fantastic. All on this tiny little thing the size of a, I don't know, a cookie jar.
That is very cool.
Wow.
But it's only available in Japan so far, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think the form factor is size is determined by the size of the buttons. They couldn't actually make it any smaller and have all the buttons sitting on the front.
Yeah, I bet you're right.
I thought that was an awful lot of fun. However, my absolute cool thing of the week, I'll just put the link in now, is this. It's a Kickstarter thing I was contacted over to get me involved and see if I wanted to help promote. It's an electric UV toilet brush. It's a smart toilet brush. There you go. So if you go to Kickstarter and look for something called Good Papa, literally Good Papa, they've got a toilet brush, and it's like, you know, electric toilet brush. It spins round, and I suppose all the shit flies off. I mean, I've no idea. But, there you go. I just and this idea that, you know, it doesn't need cleaning. It just uses UV light. There's something very Trump-esque about this whole thing. Just, you know, a bit of blue light will do the trick, mate. Yeah, just shine that around. You'll be cured. You know, and it doesn't, you know, it just drip dry and, ah. Oh, it's just, don't eat while watching the video. It's just, you end up going, nah. Anyway, it's a cool thing of the week. Definitely electric UV toilet brush.
Yeah, it does.
How have we survived without this?
Yeah, that is.
I don't know.
I mean, you have to charge it. I think that's the only downside. Yeah. But
keep your electric toothbrush somewhere else, yeah?
So, right.
The other side of the room.
Yeah, it is pretty cool. How much is it? $36, 32 well, euros about.
So I was thinking, if I bought an ordinary toilet brush for from a pound shop, and I bought one every year, I could have 35 years of new toilet brushes once every year for the cost of one. Well, who knows? There you go.
Hopefully, you replace them
done
more
extremely
than
well.
Once a year. But yeah. Yeah, they've definitely done more really well. Like the goal was like about 1,000 euros, and they've done 33,000. So,
oh no, I've seen a lot of people do this. Mm-hmm. Is they say, yeah, we've set our goal to be £47.36. Mm-hmm. No, look, we've exceeded our goal. You know, and it
by
looks
like
fantastic.
50,000%. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
to be fair, it is a fairly low priced item. So, like at like 32 euros. That would be, well, they would still have to sell about 36 of them, so okay, yeah. it's not a lofty goal to sell 36.
No, but if it's coming from China, it probably has a spy device in them. They'll be watching us on our toilets.
Good point.
I'll wait for the report on this from GCHQ.
Good idea.
China's going to infiltrate us and take over through our toilets.
Yeah
totally. It's not a UV cleaning light, it's actually a night vision light, isn't it?
Yeah, x-ray. It's an x-ray machine. Yeah.
I just watched the video, and clearly based on the video for this, buying one of these toilet brushes improves your entire family's happiness.
Oh, totally.
Yes.
Totally. So my cool thing is another TV show. I'm going with the TV show theme today.
I just heard about this yesterday.
Yeah, it is a Netflix show. It's called Warrior Nun. And it is really, really good. I mean, is it the best show ever? No. I would say it's a solid first season for a show. Like, there are some bad things. There are some things that where it drags on. I'm not a very religious person, so the whole religious background kind of distracted me. But it is a very interesting show that kind of balances multiple things. Like, it's a little bit of like religion versus like science, because they're kind of two sides to the whole story. It's kind of like the I don't know, I think she's a teenager technically, so the girl who like plays the main character. I think the actress is actually, as usual, like, she's an adult, but playing a teenager. Very well written, I would say. And the story is basically about, like, she is like an orphan who is, was it quadriplegic? I don't remember. But she's like, basically she's killed by her caretaker. And basically in the morgue, a mystical ring is implanted into her back to hide it away. Like, that's the whole setup of the story. And she basically is revived, and now she's supposed to be like the savior and like whatever the leader of that of like a kind of a church cult sect thing, and she just flat out refuses. Like, she doesn't want to do that, and like goes like through a whole thing of like figuring out what she is and what she wants to do, and like what the truth also is about what's really going on, and that's like that it has nothing to do with mystical powers, and it's really about like people over centuries manipulating women and manipulating people and like getting their way, basically. So it's a really, really good show. As that, like, some parts were kind of weird and cringeworthy, but overall it was a very solid show with a solid cast. It's, I think, set in Spain somewhere for the most part, so it's not US based, which I also really enjoyed. Like, just a very different background. Just a solid show.
All the media in France are talking about it.
Oh, okay.
So I'm glad you've explained it, because I was actually surprised looking at it. It says it's rated age 16.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, there is definitely.
I assumed it was aimed at children, so it's aimed at older teens.
Definitely.
Based on the trailer, this is not aimed at children at all.
Like, there's a lot of blood.
The end of the trailer in the U.S., and I'm sorry, Ewan, you're about to have an edit. The end of the trailer says, fucks given, and then the next frame says, none, spelled N-U-N.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, I don't know. I just so it's a bunch of nubile young girls,
mm-hmm.
and it's aimed at adults. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely is. As I said, like, it's definitely like a lot of blood and people get killed and stuff like that. So, like, I would say it's a combination of mystery, science fiction, like a couple of different elements together. Little bit of what was that?
It looked like there's a little bit like of fantasy type. Yeah,
definitely.
Theme in it.
Are there some old people in it at least?
Yes.
So
yeah,
it
doesn't
feel creepy watching it. Yeah.
No, absolutely. There are adults and older people in there. Like, basically the church people and the head of the company that is like running the more sciencey area. There are a lot of adults in there. It's basically just the main characters are like, as I said, I'm guessing teenagers or like young adults at least. But I would say it is probably targeted at like young adults and also older. Like, it doesn't really, I think everybody can get something out of it.
I just looked up the episode list, and the title for each episode is a Bible verse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which I have no clue about, like, what it even means and all that. So, yeah. Good. As I said, it was a good show. It's on Netflix. There will be a second season, apparently, which I'm really excited about. It ended at a point where I was like, no, there must be another episode. This can't be the end. And they were like, okay, this is it. So yeah, we will have to see. Like, nothing, like, the one thing I can tell you, like, I don't want to spoil it, nothing is as it seems. That is kind of the theme of this show. All right. And you were on the video all the time, the entire time, Alistair.
That's right. Well, what was I doing? Picking my nose? I was contemplating myself, do I add this to my long, long list of things I really have to see years and years after everyone else have already seen it?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've not seen a single episode of Friends, and I've not seen a single episode of Buffy. I'm not proud of it. I haven't got around to it. There's so many other things I've got to watch first, and I'll get there eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the same thing. Like, I mean, it took me forever to watch Gilmore Girls. It took me forever to watch How I Met Your Mother. Like, I sometimes, like, there's just too much content that you can't watch everything. Like, even if everybody's talking
there's
about...
There's so much good stuff you want to watch again.
True, yes, absolutely.
I'm just going through all the Riddick films all over again. Are just so good.
Now you've given me ideas. Maybe I should do that too. Anyway, thanks guys for being here. And Alistair, let the good people know where they can find you.
Oh, yeah. Well, I said last week that I tried putting a couple of stories on medium.com. I now have, I think, 3 stories up there, and I have earned the total of now 45 cents.
Ooh.
So I'm hoping to break the half dollar over the next week.
Wow. You might be able to afford a beer soon.
Yeah.
And like a cheap one, but you know, it's still
very cheap. We'll share it.
All right.
So yeah, medium, look for me, and who knows, you might push me over the 50 cent mark.
Well, I'll do that. Jeff, how about you?
I am not on mediums, so I'm clearly not earning beer money. But I am on Twitter and Instagram. I'm JGam at both places, and I'm on all kinds of shows. Google me, I'm easy to find. And we are getting closer to the launch of my new podcast.
Nice.
Good.
Very excited.
I'm pretty excited too.
I can imagine that. And yeah, you can find me and everything I do on thepatrice.com. You can find my podcast that I started like a couple months ago at this point, or like a month and a half ago. On foodieflashback.com, like some really, really good episodes with Jeff and with Ewan and with Hawa and with a lot of other people. I just recorded one with Callum this week, so you can look forward to that. That was also very interesting. Someone very young and still very interesting to talk to. And if you are interested in being on the show, podcaster or not, foodie or not, actually most people on the show have said they're not foodies, which was very interesting so far, because everybody has a different definition of what a foodie is. But yeah, if you're interested, just reach out to me and we'll set something up and we'll have a blast. Like every show has been really fun so far, so we'll have a blast. And you can find all the shows on BritishTechNetwork.com. There's the Big Show, there's the Mac Show, there's a news show every day, created by Kyle from the Philippines. So every morning UK time, when you wake up and like head to the office or not, head to your home office maybe, you can find a really cool news show with the latest every day. And the only reason why we can do that is because of you supporters and everybody basically like paying for it, or us being able to pay him a little bit for it, because it is a lot of work and he's doing it every day. So I think that it's just fair to do that. And as I said, it's because of the awesome listeners of BTN that we can do that. And there's also a photo show that was recorded. Another one was recorded today. So also that is going on. So if you're into like photography or anything like that, then head over to BritishTechNetwork.com and have a look at that. And with that, thank you everyone for listening. Thanks guys for being here. And talk to you next week.